And ladies and gentlemen, please help warm welcome for Chris R. Chris Raymer. I am a recovered alcoholic. This is a hoot. I don't know, but it's about a year ago, David called and emailed first, I guess, or called and booked me to come do this. He said, we got this little group in Boca, just come and visit. And this nice little group you got. I didn't think there was this many drunks in Florida. Jeez. If you squint your eyes from here, though, it just freaks me out. If you squint your eyes, it's like talking in New Jersey. It's I've never seen so many gangster-looking buckaroos in my life. Women are babes. Women are, you guys, no wonder everybody's moving to Florida. Guys, I'm grateful to be here. I want to thank David and the committee. These are the cats that arranged it, and just what a hoot. My wife, Patty, when y'all were going through the hurricane deal, you know, she looked up on the TV and said, well, I guess you can mark that one off, you know, because you won't be going to Florida in 3 weeks. And, you know, what a bunch of drunks. What can I say? It's the coolest. And I'm so grateful to be here. For any of you that suffered financial loss or on and on and on, my prayers were with you. Everybody in Texas was. So I want to mention a couple of things. I know we got a lot of very new people here, and I want to look at the watch so I don't go over. You know that 50-50 raffle is a cool thing. Y'all need to make sure that y'all understand that I didn't get the other half of that raffle. You know, when I'm asked to speak, it's first come, first serve, and I don't care how many people are there. If it's a member, if it's a Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous that wants me to come do it, I fly anywhere. They pay my expenses. For any of y'all that might be wondering, no free golf games, no hookers. Which I think is pretty cheap of the bastards, but it's so good. It's great. It's like old home week. You know, so many of y'all have picked up cards of mine and CDs, and y'all contacted me and called me at the house and visit. And I get to know so many of y'all long distance. The internet is the wonderful thing with emails, and it's so cool to meet some of y'all that I have emailed to for years. I finally got to meet Carla. I've been emailing her back and forth when she was still living up in Maine, and get to put a name with a face. And somehow the email, you know, laugh out loud doesn't do justice to that laugh. You know? Driving back from the airport today, you kind of caught me off guard there for a minute. She seemed like such a sane person on the email. And now she's retarded. I work in a treatment center, and I have for 13 years, and I'm in and around the treatment center industry, and I'm certainly not here representing those facilities. I'm a big fan of treatment. For many of us, it was the only way to go to get where we are today. My passion, absolute passion in this program, comes from the fact that I nearly died getting here, and I'm the real McCoy, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that tonight. I had such a tough time getting sober. I was 7 years in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous picking up desire chips before I finally got sober. And I watched hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people die of this disease guys, every week we got somebody else dying from our hospital and others that I know of, and this is a tragic deal. Alcoholism and drug addiction both are devastating. And here's what I want you to hear before I get into this little tirade. because the CDs are wonderful. You know, y'all pick up those CDs and y'all listen to them, but a lot of times you'll get it in the middle and you you missed this first part, and I've started doing this the last couple of years because I got tired of listening to you guys call me pissed off, mad. It's not my intention to make anybody mad. I'm just here. My experience is my experience. You ain't going to take that away from me. And in the same breath, I'm going to say, I'm not going to stand up here and tell your story. This is my story. Some of you got to Alcoholics Anonymous and you sit in these meetings all day long and you talk about your day and your problems and you're sober 30 years and you think that's the way it's supposed to be. Buddy, that's just rock and roll. Good God. Go for it. That's not my experience. And I have nothing else to share but my experience. I'm just, you know, we're hamstrung here because everybody believes what they hear to be gospel. You come from a treatment. I cannot tell you how many people I talk to. And it's been wonderful this afternoon being up here, listening to how so many of y'all have a lot of the same experiences I was having and have been, we got a lot of people on the page in this room, and I feel very, I almost said comfortable doing this. I've never felt comfortable behind the podium. I'd rather eat a cat turd than do this. How's that for a piece of honesty? But I hear it all. Well, my sponsor said. Well, my counselor said. You know, my treatment center said. You know, and that's all great and good and wonderful. But how do I know? I mean, at a certain point, folks, let me ask you this question. What's the message of Alcoholics Anonymous? Message of Alcoholics Anonymous is the 12 steps so that we can have the necessary spiritual experience and overcome our obsession with the alcohol. Am I right?
You are right.
We just read the traditions. They read them wonderfully up here. We have one primary purpose. That's to carry the message of hope to the newcomer. Carry the message of the 12 steps. Now guys, if your sponsor is telling you anything different than what the 12 steps say, you might want to hold it suspect. Because here's what I'm saying. And you guys can decide if you want to stay or go, because the rest of the story is just going to go downhill from here. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship that you can join on demand. You walk in the door and say, I'm an alcoholic. You are a member. And you can sit in our meetings and say anything you want to say, and nobody's going to say anything. I'm down with that. But there's a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous that are not alcoholics.
No.
Hard to believe. Hard to believe. You see, my book says quite clearly that we're suffering from a fatal illness. And it also says on page 34 that if you can get sober on a non-spiritual basis, you're not one of us. If you don't need God to get sober, if you just need the fellowship, you're not one of us. Thanks, Mom. Which y'all should stand up here. We probably got 400 people in here, and some of y'all look like deer in a headlight. Like, what's he saying? But I'm saying, unless you've had the experience of dying of a fatal illness, maybe you won't understand my passion. Maybe you won't understand my rigidity. When I watch somebody coming into these meetings acting a fool, my sponsor said I could do this any way I want. Your sponsor's trying to kill you. If you're the real McCoy. So. I'm going to say this now, and I'll probably say it again before I'm off this podium. But at what point did it become okay not to tell the newcomer how to get sober? Because you can go to any meeting here in Florida, Texas, anywhere I speak, and close your eyes and sit in the back and listen to see what you hear coming out of people's mouths, and imagine yourself a newcomer, and you may or may not hear the solution. We've got this idea that sooner or later, the alcoholic's going to stick. You know, my experience is, sooner or later, an alcoholic gets tired of trying and tries to do what I did in 1987, and that's commit suicide. We die, folks. Still to this day, we die by the thousands. When did it become acceptable not to tell the newcomer how to get well? I grew up down in the hill country, Texas. It's about 60 miles from San Antonio, and Appalachia of Texas, is truly. I live in a little town, it's about 1,700 people, and there's areas.
Where apples are the harvest?
what happens in the body will stay in the body. It is a tough place to be. I don't know. The family trees just have one little stalk. There's no limbs on there, you know? Little guys running around with two eyes on one. It just, you know, like looks like flounders. It's a little inbred back up in there, and there's a lot of drinking. And I started drinking. I've got an identical twin brother. We started drinking in high school. My father was an alcoholic, and alcoholism and drug addiction, folks, we know without a shadow of a doubt, is genetic. There's a genetic predisposition to it, and it's understood today. We're born that way. A lot of you guys are really disappointed because you've been milking this crap for years, you know. I'm an alcoholic because of Vietnam. No, you're not. You're an alcoholic because you were born this way. Did Vietnam exacerbate the problem? You probably. You down with this?
Yep.
A lot of you are not. Don't know what to tell you except read the book. I got a little sister that's about a year and 3 months younger than me. She never had a problem with alcohol. I got a half sister who's never had a problem with alcohol. We make fun of them. It's the holiday season. Just a few weeks, what? Thanksgiving. They'll all be over at the house. They'll all be having those little chickens. What do you call them? Mimosas. You know, you pour a little champagne and orange juice, you know, and you drink. Oh, cheers, everybody, like that. And then she'll set it down and she won't touch another drop. It just freaks me out. You know, I said, Lisa, you want to finish this? She says, no, it's hot. It's hot because you keep screwing with it. You're supposed to drink. See, she raised in the same family I was. She's not genetically predisposed to this. My brother and I, we caught the genetic bullet, just like my dad. But what people don't understand is that the effect that alcohol has on me is completely different than the effect that my little sister has. And I mean, we just keep waiting for her to blossom into something. And I don't know. Started drinking in high school. I remember my first drink the month that Bill Wilson, our co-founder, passed away. In 1971, I picked up my first drink. A bottle of Boone's Farm apple wine. Oh, these are a bunch of losers. Y'all know that? Oh, man. It's nasty. I can remember everything about that bottle. Everything about the color, everything about the taste, everything about the night I drank it. We're down the river underneath the big old 700-year-old cypress tree and pulled. I remember everything about it. Guys, have you ever wondered? Every one of y'all in here, nodding your heads, is you can remember your first drink. I can't tell you that. I don't have a. Can you tell me about the first time you ate green beans? It was Thanksgiving. No, you can't. Here's the grinder. I was what we would call a functioning alcoholic. A lot of y'all can identify. I had a period of time when alcohol did for me all the things, well, the original reasons why I started. I was uncomfortable in my skin. It's exactly what the book says. I was suffering from a thing called a spiritual malady. Exactly what the book says. I was irritable. Can y'all identify with irritable?
Yeah.
Restless.
Yeah.
Discontent.
Yeah.
Fearful.
Yeah.
Depressed.
Yeah.
Bored.
Always.
Anxious.
Yeah.
Low sense of esteem.
Yeah.
The book calls it a feeling of uselessness.
Yeah.
No sense of direction. Y'all get down with that one? They call it adult attention deficit disorder today. They'll give you some cool Ritalin you can chop up and snort if you. But guys, depression is the number one symptom of alcoholism. Number one symptom. And we've been trying to medicate it with pills forever. It will not work. Not knocking it. I'm just telling you it won't work. If you're an alcoholic. And I'm coming apart. I'm in the food business. I was talking to we got a lot of chefs in this room. Thank you for the food. Bless you for the food. It was wonderful. I was thoughtlessly overserved, though, I need to tell you. I was pretty successful. I think a lot of alcoholics and addicts are quite talented as a general nature. Maybe that was God's divine purpose. I'm going to give you a fatal illness, but I'm going to make you very talented. I successful. I moved around a lot because I believe that my situation, I believe for years, thanks to the therapist who informed me that I was a situational drunk, and the situations of course changed quite frequently. And early on in my drinking career, I started seeing a therapist, and I catch a bad rap. Sometimes people think I'm making fun of therapy. I'm such a firm, huge fan of therapy. I think we get kind of knotted up out there in our disease, and good therapy can sometimes unknot you pretty quick. And I'm grateful that I had it and still have it at times. But my problem was not situational. And I spent 20 years drinking and drugging, trying to organize my external world so I could get okay inside. It was always the food business, Tom. You know, for me, for 15 years in the food business, it's this damn career. Therapist, you know, you've got to get out of the food business or you're never going to stay sober, because the pressure in that business is horrendous. And if anybody knows that's ever been in that industry, and I would get out periodically and still drink. And you know, you've got to get out of this relationship, Chris. And I would get out of that relationship and still drink. And I would move to Atlanta, and I would move back to Texas, and I would move all around and still drink. I love it when people, you know, they're leaving treatment. I have to get out of Texas. I can't stay sober here. I said, where are you going to go to? Well, I've got accepted in a halfway house in Florida. Did you not see Miami Vice? Was there not... Oh, yes. The idea, and we have an industry that fosters this. We go to treatment and we learn about our triggers and the things that cause us to drink, which is just absolute crap. How many of you guys drank a drug when life was great? Raise your hand. How many of you guys drank a drug when everything was cruddy? How many when you was a great relationship with somebody? How many when you was dating Satan's sister? Lots of money? No money? Clear outside? Rainy outside? Watching television? Going to work? Guys, if we do this, guys, I don't care what country I'm in talking from the podium, we do this little exercise and everybody does the same thing. Then let me ask you a question.
Here we go.
All that's coming off tonight. Let me ask you a question. Then why is it, if we all know that, why is it that we insist on going to the meetings and talking about all that crap? Why? If I say anything controversial from the podium, this is it. I'm going to ask you the question again. If you're drinking because you're an alcoholic, suffering from the physical allergy, mental obsession, and spiritual malady, then why is it that we spend 90% of our time in AA meetings, mainstream AA, open discussion hell, talking about our problems? Do I think you need to talk about those problems? Yes. Welcome to the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Come before the meeting. Stay after the meeting. Let's talk. Let's go to Denny's. Tell me all about that divorce one more time. I cannot wait. But for a stinking hour during the day, for just an hour during the day, why can't we focus on the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the 12 steps? Here's my grinder about it. You know, I've watched people come out of our hospital and they're doing the work there and they start to have a spiritual experience. You'll follow us? And I believe everybody, I got taken to a place, I call it a grace period. It's a time when the obsession falls away, and some of you idiots out there call it the pink cloud, which I find very disrespectful. It's called God's grace. And most of us have experienced that. It's a little window of opportunity. Bill Wilson understood it. They talked about it. It's a time when you can utilize, finish doing the work so that you can stay in that spot for the rest of your life. It's called called permanent recovery. That's why I introduced myself as a recovered alcoholic. Because I finished the 12 steps, I had a spiritual experience, the obsession to use lifted, and as long as I stay in the trench, 10, 11, and 12, do what I'm supposed to be doing, the obsession stays away. Guys, I have not obsessed about alcohol in 18 years. And I want that so passionately for every person in this room. And what kind of a job do we do the newcomer when we paint this picture that it's a daily thing? Today you're okay, tomorrow you might not be. God. I mean, guys, I got to say it. Is it any wonder we can't keep the young adults in our meetings? Who in the hell wants to join a fellowship where you have to admit that you're powerless and sick for the rest of your life? I have alcoholism. I will die with alcoholism. But alcoholism has been in remission for me for 18 years. I'm happy, joyous, and free. When life throws its curves at me, I'm able, with the power that I've been given from this fellowship, to walk through those things with grace and dignity and come out the other side without the hindrance of the obsession of alcohol stopping me dead in my tracks. Let me make a point real quick. Alcoholism will not be treated by going to meetings and not drinking one effing day at a time. And I know some of you older people in here are offended by that. Not the F thing, but the one day at a time. Dr. Bob asked the alcoholic number 3 if he was ready to stop for good and for all. Are you done? Here's what happened to me. I started and quit a bunch of jobs. I had some businesses that never were very successful. I discovered some outside issues in 1979 that cost a lot more than a six-pack of beer. And I ended up dipping in the till a little bit. And so about $100 at a time. But what happened in the early 80s, I came home ripped and got into an altercation with first wife, and she was very, very scared, and I was very, very scared and very upset. And because of that, I ended up at a little counselor's office with MHMR there in Texas, lowest rung counselor out there. And I brought my chart with all of my diagnoses in there because I wanted to explain. Listen, I mean, I know we got into this altercation at home, but you have to understand. I mean, I'm bipolar, and I have manic depressive disorder, and I'm borderline schizophrenic, and I'm this, and I'm that, and the other. You know, every time I go to another counselor, they'd give me a new diagnosis and another handful of pills, and that was supposed to fix it. So, listen. Somebody's grinding their teeth. He's making fun of those of us that are bipolar. No, I'm not. I'm saying it's highly overdiagnosed. What I've suffered from is a spiritual malady. When I stop drinking, folks, I don't get better. I get worse. I'm a quitting fool, folks. I can quit for weeks. If she's good looking enough, months. There's a brunette back over there with glasses that I could have stopped for 2 months. Nice. The problem is, the further I get away from the drink, the more uncomfortable I become inside. And gradually the pain of staying sober outweighs the benefits. And I say, to heck with it. And pick up my headset. Well, just stay away from the outside issues. Just drink beer. Just drink wine. Just stay away from the VO. Do that. And all the little experiments that we do. And I end up, no matter what I put in my body, usually prescription medication, and I'll end up going back to the alcohol. It's called cross-addiction. It happens to us. If you're an alcoholic, you can't take other drugs because the allergy will be triggered again and we'll be off to the races. I could talk an hour just about this. I have watched dozens of people that I've shared the podium with in the last few years, dozens, die this year at the hands of a prescription pad. What happens? They get out here a ways. They're speaking from the podium. They're doing this, that, and the other. They stop doing the work, the 12 steps. They become uncomfortable in their skin. They go to the doctor. The doctor prescribes meds. You're suffering from depression. You know shit. But they don't understand that because they've never read the book. Doctor looks up over his little glass and says, I bet you're having trouble sleeping too, aren't you? How did you know? We can fix you right up. I bet you can. Here comes the prescriptions. Nice little antidepressant with a good barbiturate stuck on its ass end to help you sleep. You wake up 2 days later, thirsty. I don't know what happened. I was going to meetings. I'll say it again. Going to meetings and just not drinking will not treat alcoholism. How many of us in this room? I've met so many of y'all this afternoon. Long-term sobriety. How many of y'all know people out there that died sober recently? Let's change the verbiage. Dry. Recently. Tragic to watch. You think you've got to drink to die? Buddy, this disease will kill you drunk or sober. When the internal condition becomes so uncomfortable you can't stand it, you will take a gun and shoot yourself. You can't live in that condition. Normal people that are sitting in this room will not understand that. This little lady in the MHMR looked at my chart. She said, Chris, I don't know about all these diagnoses. What it looks to me like is you're drunk. I was pissed. It just doesn't roll off the tongue. It's not cool to be an alcoholic. No. Gosh. She sentenced me to AA. And I went. I'll never forget my first AA meeting in Denton, Texas. And I walked in and the guy says, do you have a problem with alcohol? And I said, yes. And he said, sit down, welcome. And I said, shit, that wasn't so bad. And then we went around and everybody shared how they got here. It's a war story meeting. Share your story with Chris. And they did. But you see, I'm in early 80s. I'm still functioning. And they're starting to talk about the DWIs. Well, I haven't had a DWI. And I'm not pencil checking off. I'm in my head. Never done that. Check. I beat my wife. Check. I robbed a liquor store. Check. I've been in the federal penitentiary. Check. It's obvious what they're doing is they're trying to outman it. I've had 60 WIs. Check, 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 check. Absolute rubbish. Lots of people out there have DWIs, folks, and they're not suffering from the disease of alcoholism and drug addiction. Period. But you come in these meetings and that's all you want to share is your story. Your story is as valuable as it can be in a 12-step call. But in a meeting, hey, I got news for you. I'm here. You don't have to bring me. I'm here. Now, what are you going to try to do? Scare me here? I don't think in the back of this book it's got a chapter into scare. I'm looking. I don't see it. Unbelievable. It says pull the newcomer with a vision. But nobody at that meeting did. They just scared the daylights out of me. I went home and I said, honey, I thought this was going to work. But man, you want to talk about a room full of losers? And why shouldn't I have said that? Because that's exactly what we sounded like. Did anybody talk about the power that God gave them? I'm not blaming them. I have to take partial responsibility. Did I ask any questions? Did I stay after the meeting? No, I couldn't wait to get the hell out of there. Right. And I spent the next 7 years in and out of meetings. My favorite meetings were the junior therapy meetings, though. Those were fascinating. When we weren't trying to scare each other into recovery, we were trying to fix each other. After all, Alcoholics Anonymous is the biggest, largest self-help group in the world. You know where that crap came from? Treatment centers. I got to tell you something, folks. If I could fix myself, I'd have been fixed a long time before the 80s. I can't fix myself. God fixed me. The spiritual experience fixed me. Have I been blessed by guidance from this fellowship?
Yes.
Yes, and continue to on a daily basis. Thank you. But sitting in a stupid meeting, listening to you talk about some off-the-wall stuff. Let me ask you a question. We talked about this earlier after smoking by the road, almost getting run over multiple times. I don't know about here in Florida, but in Texas, you know, you get one of your little fried pod crack addicts and you'll come into the meeting and nobody has told you kind of what our rules are here. In an organization that has no rules, we have plenty, let me tell you. We've got these things called traditions and outside issues, and we don't talk about that. We talk about our problems with alcohol. A little guy comes in and starts talking about his crack addiction, and some guy, well-meaning member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I mean that seriously, a responsible member, will shut him down. Excuse me a minute, we're not here to talk about drugs. That's the way it should be. I'm not arguing that. Outside issues. Let me ask you that. Nobody has any problem with that in Texas or other places I speak. You're right. This is for AA. Then let me ask you a question. What's the difference with us then turning the meeting open, who's got the problem, and you talking about your stupid divorce one more time?
Yep.
What's the difference? It's an outside issue.
Yep.
It ain't got jack shit to do with alcoholism. But we're going to talk about it anyway. Y'all down with it? Because we push people away. I watched the ladies come into our noon meetings. You know, nice little businesswoman. She's got a DWI. She's in trouble. Her life's in shambles. She's miserable. She comes into the little noon AA meeting. And what's the first thing we start doing? The same stuff. Going around telling our little hairy leg boy stories about how many times we were shot at and over in the hood and this, that, and the other. And the poor little lady, she's just, by the end of the meeting, she's got her perch. She's like this. She doesn't know what to do, you know? And she leaves. And then the first thing somebody wants to say, well, you know, she just didn't ruin it. She didn't want it. Come on, guys. Did we paint a clear picture of the absolute cool lives that we can have as a result of working these 12 steps? Did we give her an adequate presentation of the program? Because Bill Wilson said it clearly in his subsequent writings after the big book. We have one chief responsibility to the newcomer, and that's to give him an adequate presentation of the program. This is about living happy, joyous, and free. It's not about not drinking one stupid day at a time. I live life one day at a time. That's what the book says. I have a daily reprieve based on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. But to tell people this is a one day at a time thing indicates that what we have to do every morning is get up and make a decision one more time to stay sober. That's great as long as she's in my life and I got a job and everything's cool. But what happens when she leaves? I may not want to stay sober. And I'm going to tell you something, folks. I went through a divorce about 4 years ago, and there were days that I did not want to live. There was the closest thing to a son I'll ever have involved in that divorce. Not once did I want to drink. That's the power of God. That's the message we need to be carrying back to the newcomer. 7 years in and out, listening to war stories, junior therapies out the kazoo. Here's where it comes from. Well, if she comes in here and she has a problem and she doesn't talk about it, she may drink. She's going to drink anyway. Unless she has the spiritual experience, she's going to drink. That's what we need to be telling them. You down with that? I'm listening to myself talking. I sound so harsh. It's just this is the only game in town, folks. Thanks to Supreme Court decisions that came down in the late 90s. Buddies, we're not going to be allowed to talk about God in many treatment centers in this country. Where are these cats going to come hear the solution? They're going to come right straight to our AA meetings. And if they don't hear the solution, if they're led to believe that their drinking and drugging is somehow connected to an outside issue, they're not going to stay sober. That's just been my experience. I did everything those people asked me to do in those meetings, except work the steps, get a sponsor, dig, do the things you're supposed to do. I got out of the relationship. I quit the business. I did all the outside, but it was the same.
Yep.
Got all my little ducks in a row. Perfect life. Could not stay sober.
Yep.
In 1987, everything was going so well, and the antidepressants had really kicked in. I'm taking 7 pills a day, and I'm working for my twin brother up in North Texas, and thank God for families, or I'd have been on the street. And he drove home after a long day work and picked up a 12-pack of beer and went home and picked up a stack of return checks out of my mail and opened them and realized that I'd bankrupted another checking account. I'm 35 years old and still I'm living from paycheck to paycheck. I'm this close to the street. I owe everybody. I'm driving an old $600 pickup. My health is horrendous. I am crazy. Y'all know what I mean? I don't mean crazy alcoholic. I mean, I am hearing things. I'm having trouble making the simplest decisions. Turn left, go to work. Turn right, go home. No, I just, and some of y'all can relate to this, you know? Open the closet, you know? Guys, I've got 6 Fruit of the Loom t-shirts and 2 pairs of Levi's, and I can't figure out what to wear. The book says our problems pile up on us and they become astonishingly difficult to solve. And I am losing my mind. And I'm sitting there with these return checks and I just, without any fanfare, I got up and I said, I'm done with this. And I went to the medicine cabinet and got a couple of bottles of pills from doctors that had given me for my nervous disorder. And I started swallowing the pills and washing them down with a bottle of the quart of beer. And I heard a voice about the time I got about 3 or 4 of those pills down my throat and said, Chris, don't do this. Go back to AA. I heard a voice in that apartment that said, Chris, don't do this. Go back to AA. I believe in God. Always believed in God. Always believed that God didn't want to have a thing to do with me. And here was this voice. Heard it about 3 times that night. I made myself sick. It freaked me out. I'm living in a one-room apartment. I can see the entire room from the window, from the medicine cabinet window where I took those pills, and there's nothing in that room but me. I'm looking under the bed, in the closet. Where's this? Chris, don't do this. Go back to AA. And I'm arguing with a voice. I ain't ever going back to AA. I hate those bastards. If I have to go back to one more meeting and listen to you talk about how the cat clawed your chair up again, I'm going to scream. I don't want to hear about your kids. I don't want to hear about your job. I don't want to hear about the traffic. I don't want to hear about the weather. I don't want to. I made myself sick, lay down on the bed. The next morning I woke up and heard the voice one more time. I went to the doctor that morning, got some doggy downers to detox because I made a commitment. Tonight I'm going to be in an AA meeting. And I went to a different meeting. I'd never been to this meeting before. A guy showed me where it was one time. He said, Chris, there's a bunch of people that are working the steps in this group. If you ever really want to hear how to get well, you might want to try to stop and see these. That's the last thing I wanted. Y'all with it? So that night at 6 o'clock, I believe I had my second spiritual experience. I had the courage to get out of my truck. And I'm detoxing like a big dog by now. You know, it was November 13th, a Friday. Friday the 13th, 1987, and I walked in the back door of this AA meeting, and it was one of those long shots. We were still smoking at meetings back then. Everybody was smoking. Some of them were smoking 2 cigarettes at the same time. Ceiling was dropping down, you know. But the deal is that they were all laughing. You know, the minute I walked in, I knew they were laughing at me, and I got real uncomfortable and checking my patch, you know, make sure I'm okay. Making sure my pants are zipped. I have a terrible habit of walking around with my pants unzipped. Get cooler that way. And I start to back out, and this little 19-year-old girl gets between me and the door. Her name was Denise, and she's still sober today. And a 19-year-old girl got between me and the door. And I'm full beard, hair down back to back. I mean, I'm rough looking, and I'm mad, I'm pissed, and I don't feel good. And I want to leave. This was a great idea, but it's not going to work. And she said, sit down, cowboy. And she grabbed had her finger in my belt loop and pulled me down into a chair. You with us? Now listen, guys, I've said this from a podium. It's come across like I'm knocking young adult meetings. But I'm just here to tell you my experience. If she'd have been off in a young adult meeting instead of in mainstream AA, I'd have been dead tonight. But because this little 19-year-old girl had the courage to recognize me as a newcomer. And pull me down in a chair and not let go, I'm sober today. Because they went around that table, the chairperson had seen me up for 7 years picking up chips, and they all went around and they all shared little vignettes of how their life had changed as a result of working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. They talked about getting a sponsor, and they talked about working the 12 steps rapidly. They talked about not taking your time to work the steps. I want to interject here, if you're one of the wonderful sponsors out here that are telling your people to take your time, stop now.
Amen.
That is an absolute opinion, and nowhere in the book does it say that. It said, seek the solution with the desperation of a drowning man. Again, because there's so many people in our fellowships that are not even alcoholic, they had time to wait. They didn't work the steps for 2 years. That's perfectly, it worked for them. But if you're the real McCoy, if you're suffering from alcoholism, you're going to die. Left unattended, you will become so uncomfortable you can't stand it and you'll pick up. Y'all down with that?
Yeah.
It's just okay. We went around and they shared stuff with them. They didn't talk. There was no Bible beating in that room. They didn't talk about Jesus. They talked about their own higher power, their own understanding. And they talked about getting their credit cards back and getting a date and doing the cool things, buying a house and doing the great miracles that happened to us in sobriety. Buying new pickup trucks. I mean, hot damn. He drives in a brand new pickup truck. I'll get the side. It says roofing on the side. Boy, brother, you're in the right place at the right time. Go get him, brother. But see, that's what it's about. And we go into our meetings, see, and we're afraid to tell anybody we got a new truck or a nice thing or something good has happened. Because everybody's pissing and moaning, and we don't want to rock the boat. We just want to say, oh, isn't that sad? You're having a tragedy. Buddy, these meetings ought to be pep rallies. We ought to be in there pulling the newcomer with... Because listen, folks, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, when I walked in that back door, there was one thing that I needed above everything else. Hope. I just needed some hope. Can you not wake up and think about drinking? Will the shakes ever stop? Will my mind ever just come back to two or three voices instead of 50? Well, here's an important one. Will Mr. Winky ever work again? Cut to the chase and answer that question now? Absolutely. It may be small, but it works. I'm off the page, Your Honor. All right. After the meeting, this should be quite hard. Give that girl oxygen. It's got to hurt, Carla. It's just got to hurt. After the meeting, there was an old geezer, just like a bunch of you cats that I've met here in this room right here. Old geezer came up and said, Chris, he said, let me ask you a question because I've watched Jeff for a long time. He says, are you done? Are you finished? Done? Do you really want this? And I said, yeah, I do. I'm willing to do this, you know, one day at a time. He said, that's what I thought. And he got his coffee and he left the room. I chased after him because it pissed me off. I was like, buddy, that wasn't the right answer. I mean, I've been around AA for 7 years. I know what to say. We got all the goddamn one-liners right here. I mean, the little guy comes in and he's just psychotic and he's freaking out and somebody looks at him, easy does it. First things first. I'm like, Jesus. All right, can we come up with something with a little more depth and weight than that? The problem is, it's not the one-liners, it's they take them out of context. It's with our families we're supposed to take it easy. Doesn't mean do the steps easy. Finish them rapidly. Bill Wilson worked them. A few weeks. Dr. Bob, 2 weeks. Bill D, number 3, 2 weeks. Oh, but you can take your time to finish them. I don't understand. I went after the guy and I said, buddy, ask me again. And he did. And I said, buddy, I'm willing to do whatever you ask me to do. Because I am sick and tired of being a loser. I'm sick and tired of not experiencing the beauty that this world has to offer. Quote unquote. I'm tired of dying. He said, buddy, welcome. And he hugged my neck. Like only somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous that's been in the trench can hug. The next morning, they were back on my doorstep to make sure I made it back to the meeting at 10 o'clock. And we went to that 10 o'clock AA meeting, and then we went in the back room and did a third step prayer. They sat down that night and they explained the physical allergy and the mental obsession. They showed me what it was to be an alcoholic. Everybody in this place, we hear it in our treatment centers until I want to puke. Where's your bottom? Where's your bottom? Where's your bottom? Hey, let me... I considered for a moment mooning you, but I didn't. Spiritual growth, buddy. And I can't remember which doors I'm wearing. That's the guys. Your bottom is when you understand that you have a fatal disease that's going to kill you. That's your bottom. When you're convinced that you're really one of us and that there's nothing else to do but seek spiritual intervention, you're ready. Because we've proved time and time again that you cannot learn from your mistakes. The big book says quite clearly, you won't remember the consequences of even a week or a month ago. You're not going to remember your own war stories. What makes you think you're going to remember mine? Said it from a million CDs. We did a third step prayer on our knees back in the Al-Anon room. We got up, we went to eat some lunch and came back, and they gave me a notebook and started working on a fourth step. Day two. And I've got a completed fourth step 2 weeks later. I'm done with the fourth step, ready to do a fifth step, waiting for my sponsor to get back in so I could do a fifth step with him. And I drove home to North Texas, and I pulled the tailgate down of my truck in the same apartment complex where I tried to commit suicide. And I sat on the tailgate, and I looked around, and I realized I was absolutely surrounded by liquor. And it's a Friday night. I got some money in my pocket, and nobody lives in my apartment to say no. My dope dealer lives in the apartment complex where I live. And it dawns on me that I haven't wanted to use since I don't know when. The obsession to drink had lifted from me. I was not afraid of it. I was placed in the position of neutrality, safe and protected. Those are 10-step promises, and I experienced them way before the 10th step. I don't know how anybody can get up from the podium and talk about that. I'm a cat that could not get drunk, and the obsession has been lifted. And nobody in my life had to change for that to happen. And I walked up to my little apartment, and I cranked up some hot jazz, and I washed the stupid dirty dishes, and I was absolutely on fire. You know what those people had me doing the first 2 weeks I was there? Answering the phones in the coffee room. They had me picking up ashtrays. They had me doing all the little grunt work and the chairs. See, years past, what they did was they just let me stay. Oh, don't mess with him. He's very fragile right now. Just let him sit. That was a death sentence for me because I was alone in my own head.
Yeah.
They got me out of myself. Chris, come on, we're going to go to the halfway house and take a message. I said, buddy, you don't understand. I'm the newcomer here. I'm the most important person here, remember? He says, no, buddy, you got 2 weeks of sobriety. Your newcomer status left about the second day you were here. You're ready to go. Let's go. I didn't get up and share a big book meeting or deliver the steps from the podium. I got up and I carried the big books. But I was out of my head and I was being of service. And that's what those people knew. If I didn't get off my butt and become... Here's how we're killing people in our fellowships. I got to wind this down. I'm running out of time. Here's how we're killing people. We've got people all over the world, and I mean that literally, in places that I speak, who are still believing that the newcomer has got nothing to share. Now, I don't know about your experience, but the last thing I wanted to hear from was somebody that was 30 years sober, because obviously they're liars. I want to hear from somebody that's 30 days sober, because I don't have a clue how to do this. And if you say you can be done, I'm going to believe that. Y'all down with this?
Yeah.
I'm not saying I didn't get a lot of great guidance from those people that were 30 years sober. I'm not saying that a newcomer should be allowed to come into a meeting and dominate the meeting. But if a newcomer doesn't get a job in this fellowship, the newcomer will not stay. The newcomer will walk right straight out, bored to tears, and never experience what it's like to give of himself. This program is about giving. That's how we keep this thing going. Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob, when they got together in 1935, that was the message that Bill and Bob finally came up with. It's by giving that we get to receive. Bill Wilson, Dr. Bob get sober. The first thing they do is go find number three. Now, why is it that it worked so great back then and our success rates were through the ceiling? 75% success rate out of our second edition for a fatal illness. That's unbelievable. And today in the United States, our success rates hover dismally in worst case, best case scenario, 20%. New York will tell you point blank. about 3% stay sober. Why is that? Thank you. No, somebody needs to hug her neck. She's got to, she understands. The book says on page 62, selfish and self-centeredness, that's the root of my problem. I want to sit on my butt and talk about my day and my problems in this insane belief that if I talk about it long enough, it'll go away and I can stay sober. But guys, we just talked about it. I drank and drugged when I had every problem solved. When I was getting laid and had lots of money, I was still drinking. I worked the steps and we started sponsoring people. And that's the way we sponsor today. I've got an accountability group with the guys I sponsor up in the Hill Country. You've got to be in my sponsorship lineage to be a part of this group. We're called the Mad Dogs on a road less traveled. You know? Because I drugged like a mad dog. I'm gonna do recovery like a mad dog. And that's what we do at that meeting. We hold everybody accountable. First question, you're in my group and you've been there 2 weeks. You're going to tell us your name, first and last. My name's Chris R. I'm an alcoholic. Jesus. Buddies, if any of you guys are in trouble and ever need my help, my name is Chris Raymer. I'm in the Ingram phone book. Out there in press, radio, and films, it's Chris R. In here with you, Chris Raymer. First and last name. Who's your sponsor? How many people are you sponsoring? Mm. Yeah. What's your commitment? Y'all know what I mean by a commitment?
Yeah.
What's your job? On Saturday morning at that meeting, what's your job? Well, I'm gonna show up. Get a job. See? And that's, but we get them involved. And what happens is they stay at that point. They become a part of a fellowship. Guys, I just got to... 70 years ago, alcoholics of my variety, and a lot I've talked to tonight, died in insane asylums. We died horrible, painful deaths, most times at our own hands. Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob got together and came up with this business with the 12 steps, gave us a solution the book said that we can absolutely agree on and join in brotherly harmonious action. This is the message we have to carry to the newcomer. So every newcomer in here needs to understand that just coming to the meeting ain't going to cut it. What are you doing when you're here? What are you doing when you leave here? That's what counts. See, here's the grinder, folks. We don't have near enough people in the trenches helping us help others get sober. I was in Houston not long ago in a driving rainstorm, and I pull up to this light, and I look over to the side, and there's this big trench and utility trucks everywhere, and there's about 20 guys. Y'all know how it is in utility situations like that. And there's two little Mexican guys down there in the hole. We can see them from where they're just digging their asses off, you know? And there's 20 guys in raincoats standing on the side. And I look at the guy who was riding with us and said, there's AA. A whole lot of people standing around shaking their head. Faster. Can't you do that better? Yeah. Is that the best you can do? Jesus. We need every hand on deck. I've met a bunch of you guys in this room with multiple years of sobriety. I've met 20s, 30s, 40 years of sobriety. Thank you. Thank you for sticking. Every woman in this fellowship, thank you. I don't care how long you've been sober, thanks for sticking. We got women dying everywhere, all over the world, because there's not enough women sponsors. They come to AA, they meet some hairy leg boy, they're gone. It's tough being a woman in this fellowship. It is.
Amen.
Everybody wants something from you, and it ain't your big book. For every guy in this fellowship that stood up for a woman and told somebody to back the heck off, thank you. Did y'all hear me knocking dating in recovery? No. It's the bomb. It's good. But guys, you know, let them get their feet on the ground a little bit before you start trying to nail them. Ladies, it goes back the other way. You follow me? My sponsor is a guy named Mark H. out of Dallas, Texas. He speaks out a lot, and He said something real quick I want to close with. He talks a lot about having my outsides match my insides. One of the reasons that I had so much trouble getting sober is that my outsides never matched my insides. I was always very irritable, restless, and discontent on the inside, but I'd come across like I'm hip, slick, and cool on the outside. And it's a real hard thing to do when you first get sober and you're out there in the trench. Some of y'all can identify with this. Oh, about 2 years sober, you know, and you're working the steps, and everybody's kind of looking up to you a little bit because you're a mainstay in the group, you know. And it's real easy for us to forget those steps called 10 and 11. This nightly review, this morning review, this idea about some meditation. And it's a lot of it's easy to pass over. I'm taking the meeting to the halfway house, and I'm doing it, but I'm not watching my own stuff. And I'm going to ask you guys to really pay attention for just a second. It goes back to what we were talking about with the pills. Irritable, restless, and discontent starts with dishonesty. Just a little crappy lie at work. A little flirtatious stuff going on, you know, even though you got a wedding band on, you know. It's not going to hurt anything. And before you know it, you compromise a little and a little and a little. And before you know it, you're kind of pulling yourself away from what got you here, which was absolute honesty. In a 10th and 11th step at night, when you sit down and you sit on the side of your bed, you could do it in writing or not. It doesn't make any difference as far as I'm concerned. But sit and review your day. Who did I blow smoke to today? Who did I not get straight with? Did I get too quick with you? Because if I did, I need to make amends. That's the stuff we look at. And as you clean up this wreckage, this daily wreckage, you will be amazed at how full your life is. And that's what it's about. Guys, God's grace falls evenly on everyone. I've ended a million talks with this. I had this firm, absolute conviction that God wanted you to be happy, but He was punishing me for my wrongdoings or something. And that was not the case. I am so humbled to get a chance to come up here and do this. Humbled to get to share business cards with you and continue to communicate long after I leave this city. It's what an honor to know you and get to share part of your life. That is the greatest gift that's ever been given me. Absolute gift from God. Folks, we need every single one of you in the trench. We don't need any more relapsers. I know we're going to have them. But folks, if you've got a couple of weeks, keep it. Because you might not get it back. We need you in the trench. We got plenty of newcomers. We need old timers. We need spiritual mentors. People that don't have a problem walking into a meeting that's gone awry and changing it. The big problem we're having in our fellowships today is meeting formats. Because meeting formats have been ingrained in so many people, called open discussion meetings, where we can go talk about our problems. We need more literature. I'm not saying let's do away with those. I'm saying we need more literature-based meetings where we know what we're going to do when we get there. We're going to open a book. We're going to pick a couple of paragraphs out of the book. And we're going to talk about that paragraph. And then after the meeting, we'll go talk about anything else you want to do. But y'all have every right to go into your group consciences and ask for changes in your meeting schedules. Please. The newcomer needs a place to hear the truth. They need to be a place to be pulled with a vision of how cool life can be. They need hope. Thank y'all for having me.